Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight. I'm joined today by Chirayu Wadka. Chirayu is a partner with Seed Plus and Jungle Ventures. Seed Plus invests in deep technology startups out of Asia. They're based in Singapore, and Chirayu focuses on devices, IoT, network infrastructure, operating systems, Industry 4.0, basically everything that we like to dig into on the Industrial IoT Spotlight. So let's talk about a couple of your portfolio companies or companies that you're evaluating now that you're interested in. What's kind of in focus for you today?
So we invested in a couple of companies so far in the IoT space. So one of them is interestingly started out thinking they would build, you know, a smartwatch, and understood that, you know, after taking some venture money, that it's not a great idea to actually build the whole thing out, and they rather just partner instead of using that money to market and buy inventory. So this company is called Cove IoT, and it's based out of Shenzhen, Singapore, Bangalore, and Geneva. And it's building a smart watch platform, right, from the PCB design, the operating system, the firmware, as well as the application layer on top. And I think the belief here is that the way smartwatches have been thought about by Android, I'm not going to touch the Apple piece because that's a closed ecosystem, but on the Android side, a lot of the brands are reluctant to use Android because you have a certain requirement on the Android side that you need to comply with. And that really means you need to sort of have the Android logo pasted on top of watch faces and have them as digital products. I think where the world is moving, and this was shown by the Misfit folks and got acquired by Fossil, is there's an opportunity to build an ecosystem where brands actually have the choice to pick a player that could help them become smarter without actually forcing a change in the actual design of the watch. So keep your analog design, but change what happens on the mobile device. So that's really been their approach. So they have been offering their platform to the top brands in Asia. And we've been lucky to sort of attract investors from Switzerland who have now taken them into some of the top brands in Switzerland. So this is a company I'm really excited about because they're actually building something that's more than just hardware. They're building sort of the operating system and some of the use cases that are seriously, I would say, very, very contextual. An example would be their watch that they just launched in India a few weeks ago. I think it was in December with a large watch brand. It's one of the largest watch brands in Asia. It was around women's safety. So they picked on the women's safety problem. And they figured that something needed to be done, and they have been able to nail it with this new watch. So yeah, that's sort of the first company that we've invested in. I am very excited about that. The second company that we've invested in is a company that's focused on incident management and the health of devices in the field on the enterprise side. So the insight here was the founder actually was the CTO of a large company, publicly listed company in the US. And his insight was, when I was managing my fleet of enterprise devices, these were POS systems. You know, there's a Cambrian explosion of radio types, operating systems, and different sort of, I would say, fragmentation of devices happening in the market because of the need of the hour, right? You need to have Bluetooth, you need to have Zigbee, you need to have Wi-Fi, NFC. And that has led to a lot of these devices actually being very bulky, multi-vendor, and extremely complex. And if these devices decide that they don't want to work, I think what lands up happening is the CTO has no way of actually knowing what has gone down and be able to fix it within a reasonable time frame. So that was the insight. And he kind of has built a product that allows for a lot of the retailers to begin with to manage their devices in the field. And it shows up as sort of a dashboard that you have 60 locations that are live. There are 50 devices in each location. And by the way, device one in location two is down. And because of that, you know, there's a there's a red alert in that store because it's the HVAC system which is down and therefore needs to be up within a certain time frame. And we're very interested in that sort of a vertical because we were trying to figure out, is there a hardware agnostic way of actually solving that problem? And this seems to be that, right? Where it just doesn't sort of monitor. It also helps you manage the incident lifecycle from the time that the device goes down to the time that it's back up. So yeah, that's the second company we've invested in. The name is, I didn't mention it before, is Copper. It's Q-O-P-P-E-R. You can take a look at it. It's a dual location. It's based out of San Francisco and then Singapore. And a huge thrust on the facilities management and retail side of the world to help enterprises track their devices and bring them up after a downtime.
Interesting. I think this whole, general needs area around simplicity or providing simple interfaces and simple solutions in an environment that's growing increasingly complex. I think there's a lot of opportunity. It sounds like that's kind of what this company is, Copper is tapping into, is providing a relatively simple solution to help manage the increasing complexity of these physical environments.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, right, a facilities manager, for example, or even a retail store manager, they're getting hammered by their IT teams on new device types coming into their store every day. And for them to manage uptime of the whole store in terms of systems and capabilities every time a new device is installed is critical. And for them to be able to reduce that risk of downtime, I mean, there are a lot of them who'd pay a lot of money for that.
I was talking with a Canadian company that does, like, let's say smart cement, right? So they embed sensors in concrete so you know when it's drying, you can so you can manage the construction process, save a lot of time, also save raw material. And then now they're moving into more permanent solutions that are able to give indications around maintenance for the lifetime of the building. But one of the things that really struck me was the target market there is, you know, small contractors, right? Like mom and pop contractors that have a few employees. They might be 55 years old. They're not going to, you know, it's got to be a super simple interface. It's got to be, you know, a couple buttons on a smartphone that, you know, you can't really make mistakes and there's no learning curve. And I think that's a really interesting problem area, is how to help companies or help individuals who are in important positions where they're managing a lot of spend, but they're not going to invest the time or the learning curve is going to be too deep for them to adopt comprehensive kind of customized solutions. So let's go a little bit broader now. I think good to have a kind of a base of where you're coming from. Let's talk a bit more around the market in general. So Southeast Asia, I think a lot of the folks that are listening here are going to be from Europe or the US. I'm here in Shanghai. I mean, it's incredible seeing Asia kind of reemerge, right, in the world as really now the number one economy in terms of scale, but also not just number one in terms of scale, but also the fastest growing economy. So a very strong momentum. China gets a lot of press, but I think Southeast Asia is equally impressive in terms of the scale and the velocity. What do you see down there that's most exciting in terms of markets? What are the markets in Southeast Asia that you're really excited about?
The way I look at it is our lens is a little larger than Southeast Asia, and I think we need to sort of have that lens because of a number of reasons. But I think mainly because for what we're trying to do, there might be stuff that's too early for Southeast Asia, and there might be stuff that's just right for Southeast Asia. So the way I would look at the market is twofold. I think the first way of looking at the market is, if I'm building something that's for emerging markets, right? And if I were to look at an emerging market approach to life, I would say that Singapore is a great place to start something because you've got literally all of the emerging markets around you. I don't count China as emerging anymore because it's kind of gone past that. But the rest of Southeast Asia and including sort of India, you have a good chunk of a couple of billion of population that's in the similar kind of income bracket that is looking for solutions. So you're looking at, you know, specifically solving problems that these set of, I would say, users are looking to get to solve. I would sort of wear a different hat. The other way of looking at life is to say, if I'm an advanced technology entrepreneur and I'm building, for example, an IoT security company, how would I look at the world? And does it make sense for me to continue to sort of sell to Southeast Asian enterprise? I would argue probably not, because in terms of maturity outside of Singapore, it's hard pressed to imagine whether Southeast Asia is really there in terms of digital transformation. I think it's definitely accelerating, led by mobile, but I think we're still sort of further away from people thinking about more advanced solutions. So my advice to companies is start your company in Singapore, which is the only place I think in Asia which gives you the option to, gives you the optionality to either go emerging markets or advanced markets, and then go to the advanced markets. So start with Singapore, go to Hong Kong, perhaps, you know, have a thought about China, then it would be Taiwan, Korea, Japan, and Australia. And that would be, you know, sort of the expansion strategy. So I don't know if I feel that it's necessary for us to have one approach to the companies that we see, but for sure, I mean, if you're building something that's low cost and built for the mass market, I think we're very interested in listening to them, because that's the bulk of the market here in this part of the world.
We've seen, I mean, we've certainly seen this in China and in Africa, for example, kind of e-commerce adoptions of blockchain, adoptions of some technologies moving more rapidly than in the West or in the US, or maybe, you know, even in Singapore or Hong Kong, because there's not the existing incumbent technology. There's a strong demand in company. You know, users are then, you know, willing to explore and take a bit risk in terms of adoption because they don't have a current technology that they're satisfied with. But absolutely right. There's also a lot of price sensitivity, and so some solutions are just not going to be a good fit because of that.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. If you have unique insight or a project deployment story to share, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. Write us at eric.walenza@iot1.com.